All right, well, let's turn tonight to Genesis 29 as we pick up in our study of this great book of Genesis and now looking at the life of Jacob. So as you will remember, Jacob, having incurred the wrath of Esau by stealing the blessing, was sent away by Isaac and Rebekah to Rebekah's family in the region of Paddan Aram. On his journey, we saw that the Lord met Jacob. And although Jacob plotted with Rebekah and deceitfully obtained the blessing, the blessing was already his. And as we pointed out, they didn't need to do any of the things that they did. But they did those things. And there are consequences ahead that Jacob will face. But it didn't retract the blessing of God. And so they're in a place called Luz, as Jacob, as he was lying there and fell asleep, he had a dream. And it was, you remember that ladder and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the ladder. And the Lord spoke to Jacob and he reaffirmed the covenant and the blessing to Jacob. And Jacob then named the place Bethel, the house of God. And so we pick up in chapter 29, Jacob moving on from Bethel. So Jacob went on his journey and he came to the land of the people of the east. And he looked and he saw a well in the field, and behold, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it. For out of that well they watered the flocks. A large stone was on the well's mouth. Now all the flocks would be gathered there, and they would roll the stone from the well's mouth, water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place on the well's mouth. And Jacob said to them, "My brethren, where are you from?" And they said, "We are from Haran." Then he said to them, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" And they said, "We know him." And he said to them, "Is he well?" And they said, "He is well. And look, his daughter Rachel is coming with the sheep." Then he said, "Look, it is still high day. It is not time for the cattle to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go feed them." But they said, "We cannot until all the flocks are gathered together and they have rolled the stone from the well's mouth. Then we water the sheep." Now, while he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. And it came to pass when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near, rolled the stone from the well's mouth, and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's relative and that he was Rebekah's son. So she ran and told her father. Then it came to pass when Laban heard the report about Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. So he told Laban all these things. And Laban said to him, "Surely you are my bone and my flesh." And he stayed with him for a month. So this long journey, and now Jacob finally arrives at his destination, several hundred mile journey that Jacob would have made. And he comes to the very place of his relatives. Now, of course, Jacob has never met any of these people. They didn't have the means of communication that we're so used to today. And so this whole experience is astounding. And again, much like with Eliezer, the servant of Abraham, you see that God was obviously leading Jacob. And remember how Eliezer, when he came to the home of Laban and Rebekah's parents, and he was seeking for direction from the Lord, remember how Rebekah came out and met him. And now there's a very similar kind of a thing transpiring here with Rachel coming out. And so Jacob is now joined with his family. Then Laban said to Jacob, verse 15, "Because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what should your wages be?" Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah. The name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were delicate, but Rachel was beautiful of form and appearance. So her eyes were delicate. This is a euphemism for she wasn't really that good looking. It's a nice way of saying it. You know, there's all kinds of talk among commentators about what this actually meant. Her eyes were weak. Some would say that, well, her eyes were dim. She couldn't see that well, but that wouldn't affect her appearance at all, of course. So something about her, she just wasn't attractive like her younger sister, Rachel. That's what's indicated here in the text. So Jacob, he loved Rachel. So he said, "I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter." And Laban said, "It is better that I give her to you than that I should give her to another man. Stay with me." So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed only a few days to him because of the love he had for her. So Jacob is deeply in love with Rachel and very happy to serve Laban for these 7 years that he might obtain Rachel as his wife. You know, it is true, when you do anything out of love for somebody else, it just really takes any burden away from it, doesn't it? You know, when you're motivated by love for somebody, there's just a delight in what you're doing. And so that was the case with Jacob. He was so in love with Rachel, 7 years just blew by. It just didn't seem like anything to him. He was so in love with her, and he was so excited about the prospect of Rachel being his wife. And, you know, if we look at that, just that idea there, and we transfer that over into our relationship with the Lord, that's the way God intends it to be with us and with Him. He doesn't want us serving Him in a way where, you know, we're sort of begrudgingly serving Him, where we're feeling that we're, you know, having to do it out of duty, and we're miserable in the process. And if we ever come to a place where service to the Lord becomes like that, then we need to stop what we're doing, and we need to reevaluate everything, and we need to really get back to, you know, just the whole idea of, you know, why am I doing this in the first place? Because if I maintain that attitude of simply, you know, I'm doing this because I love the Lord, it's gonna cause me to just have a, you know, to a large degree, just a perpetual state of joy and excitement in the work of God. And that's the way it should be. Unfortunately, we've seen many times, you know, people who will give the impression that serving the Lord is a miserable sort of a thing, something that I've got to do. You know, it's a duty. And of course, a lot of times non-Christians think that, don't they? You know, they can't understand why we would go to church more than once a week, you know. I mean, in some cases, more than once a year. But, you know, when they, you know, they find out, you know, maybe you're talking to somebody at work and maybe they say, well, what are you doing tonight? Oh, I'm going to church. Oh, you're going to church. What for? Oh, well, you know, we have church on Wednesday night. Oh, you got to go to church on Wednesday night. Oh, boy. Oh, I'd hate to go to that church, you know. But it's not, I got to go to church on Wednesday night. It's like John Corson would say, it's not a got to, it's a get to. I get to go to church. I want to come. I want to be among God's people. I want to learn more about the Lord. I want to experience His love and goodness. And you know, with the different opportunities that come up to serve the Lord, it's that attitude of love for Christ that takes the burden off of us and allows us to serve with joy and with excitement. And that's the way God intended it. That's the way it is supposed to be, just as it was with Jacob here. Now, Jacob has served these 7 years, and these 7 years have just, they've gone by so quickly because of his great love. Then Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go into her." And Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. Now it came to pass in the evening that Laban took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to Jacob, and he went into her. And Laban gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid. So it came to pass in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, "What is this you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served you? Why then have you deceived me?" Now, I wonder if at this very moment, Jacob didn't have, you know, sort of like an epiphany of realization that he has just had done to him what he had previously done to his father. I wonder if it hit him at this point. I don't know that it did, but I would think to some degree that it probably had to hit him. Because it is very similar. You know, circumstances are different, but it's very similar what has now happened to Jacob as to what Jacob and Rebekah had done to Isaac. And as we pointed out previously, you remember, the blessing of God is still on Jacob. His promises are still there and will ultimately be fulfilled. But there is this sowing and reaping thing that is going to transpire in Jacob's life. And here is where it begins. Now, think about this as well. 7 years have passed. 7 years is quite a while, isn't it? And, you know, it seems that, as we just read there, you know, the 7 years went by so quickly because of Jacob's great love for Rachel. It seems that those 7 years were probably great years. They were years of just falling more and more in love with Rachel, thinking more and more about their lives together, probably getting along with the family. And, you know, it was probably just a really great time. And I would imagine to some degree, Jacob had probably forgotten, to some extent anyway, maybe to a large extent, he'd probably forgotten why he even had left home. Well, remember, he left home because Esau wanted to kill him. Why did Esau want to kill him? Because Jacob had deceived Isaac and stolen the blessing. But all of that seems so far behind him. And I don't know if he, you know, actually would have reasoned it out, but, you know, perhaps he would have had the thought that, well, you know, that's the past and it's taken care of and I'm forgiven and God met me and he reaffirmed the covenant. And so we're moving forward. But all of a sudden, the past catches up with them right here in an instant. And look at it. You've got, well, remember the previous situation. You've got Rebecca and Jacob conspiring, and Jacob going in and pretending to be Esau and deceiving Isaac, and then through that obtaining the blessing. Now what you have is Laban, Rebecca's brother, so it seems like this kind of thing might have run in the family. So you've got Laban, and no doubt Leah is complicit in this. She's not, I don't think at all that she's just being forced into it. I think that she is part of the scam. And she has agreed to go in and to pretend to be Rachel. And so obviously she was brought to Jacob at night. Of course, it was evidently dark. However it was that Jacob didn't recognize her before the morning. He didn't recognize her. But you see the similarities there? You see the similarities between what Jacob had done and now what is happening to him? But he is amazed that Laban's deceiving him. How could you deceive me? But I would just imagine that he probably at this point, he probably started remembering much of what he did, because his response is not one of really revolting. It's almost in some senses that he sort of consigned himself to saying, all right, I've sown to the flesh. I've got some reaping to do, and I'm just going to have to, you know, stick through this. Sowing and reaping. The Bible tells us that whatever a man sows, he will also reap. And if one sows to the flesh, they will of the flesh reap corruption. But if one sows to the Spirit, they will of the Spirit reap life, life everlasting. So, you know, this is a principle that we see worked out many times over in Scripture. It's a principle that we see worked out many times just in life in general. You know, we talk about, we use the term poetic justice. You know, poetic justice is somebody, you know, getting the very thing coming upon them that they tried to, you know, bring upon somebody else. So it's the same idea, sowing and reaping. It's like Haman, who was, you know, building those gallows and so excited at the thought of Mordecai being hung on the gallows. And then in the end, what happens? Haman is the one who hangs on the gallows. It's that idea of sowing and reaping. This is a biblical principle. And this is something that we ourselves have to really think seriously about. Because just as we see here with Jacob, again, he's still God's man. He's still blessed in the bigger picture. He's still, going to be the one through whom the covenant is going to be established. But he has a lot of unnecessary hardship come upon his life because of this act. And that's what happens so often. You know, I talk to so many people whose misery is self-inflicted. They've brought it upon themselves. And that's, to me, that's the worst kind of misery. You know, if it's something that you just have no control over, well, what can you do? But if you can think back and know that, oh, it was because of that stupid thing that I did, or that foolish choice that I made, and then you're living with this thing and you're reaping the consequences of that. And so we have to really be conscious of this spiritual principle. Whatever a man sows, he will reap. So that means that we need to be sowing to the Spirit. Because if we're sowing to the flesh, there will come a day of harvest, just as it did with Jacob. It took a while, 7 years. That's a long time. But this is the reality. It's the crop will come forth ultimately. So we have got to be very, very careful to make sure that we are sowing to the Spirit. So, why have you deceived me? And Laban said, it must not be done. So in our country, to give the younger before the firstborn, fulfill her week, and we will give you this one also for the service which you will serve with me still another 7 years. Then Jacob did so and fulfilled her week. So the wedding ceremony and all of the festivities and all of that were, it was a week-long event. And so what Laban is saying, be with Leah for this week, fulfill, you know, all the, you know, festive duties and all of that, and then I'll give you Rachel. He didn't have to wait another 7 years to obtain Rachel as his wife. He obtained her after that week, but he then was bound to serve Laban for another 7 years. And so this is what he did. Jacob fulfilled her week. So he gave him his daughter Rachel as wife also. And Laban gave his maid Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as a maid. Then Jacob also went into Rachel, and he also loved Rachel more than Leah, and he served with Laban still another 7 years. So was Laban wrong? Of course he was wrong. He was deceitful. But again, it's the reaping what Jacob had sowed. But he loved Rachel, and this created a very, very difficult family situation, as you can imagine. You know, the scriptures are really interesting to me because they tell us these stories, and it's fascinating the way the Bible is able to, you know, condense, for example, a 20-year period into just a couple of chapters, or a 50-year period or something like that. We saw that with Abraham. And, you know, it will give us, you know, sort of the main points of the particular story. But obviously there are lots and lots and lots of things that are not recorded. And some things you know, as you sort of read between the lines, you can get an idea of what it must have been like. And for many, many years, this was a very unpleasant situation. So again, we see with Jacob, he goes for that 7 year period of, you know, just bliss in thinking about that moment when he can be united with Rachel. That finally comes, and now it's nothing like he dreamed. It's nothing like he hoped for because of the deception of Laban. And now he is married to Leah, who he doesn't have any affection for. He desperately loves Rachel, but now these two women who are sisters are going to be constantly competing with one another, contending with one another, and there's going to be this period. And now we're going to see it's a 20-year period of reaping what he had sowed. When we come to the end of this whole period with Laban, to me it seems that in many ways Jacob moves on from the reaping process and back into the blessing of God. He still has challenges and difficulties, but it is interesting to me that this is a 20-year period. And again, we have to think ahead before we make decisions. I am amazed at how many people make decisions without ever thinking about the consequences of them. I am absolutely astounded. And I have talked to so many people. I remember talking to a man who was, you know, crying about being disconnected from his children and not able to be with them like he wanted to. And I asked him this question. I said, did you ever stop and think about that before you had the affair on your wife? Did that thought ever cross your mind? No, it didn't, he said. Obviously, it didn't. And that's what happens to people. They don't think about the consequences of their action. We get swept up in the heat of the moment. We get swept away with passion or something. And we kind of just lose our minds. And then we do something that will potentially haunt us the rest of our lives. It's not worth it. It's never worth it. And again, this is where we have to really be thinking about these things, because the reality is, again, whatever a man sows, he shall also reap. And so, verse 31, when the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. So here we see God taking compassion on this woman, Leah. She was unloved. So Leah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Reuben. Reuben means a son. Look, a son. For she said, the Lord has surely looked on my affliction. Now, therefore, my husband will love me. Now, of course, in that culture, having children was something that was very important, and especially having sons. The sons were the one to carry on the family name. The sons were the ones, of course, who would do the work and all of those kinds of things. So for a wife to give a son to her husband, this was a very special thing. And Leah had hoped that through bearing a son for Jacob, this would win Jacob over. Now I've got my son, and my son's come through Leah. Rachel was barren, but that didn't happen. So she conceived again and bore a son and said, because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me this son also. And she called his name Simeon, which means heard. She conceived again and bore a son and said, now this time my husband will become attached to me because I have borne him three sons. Therefore, his name was called Levi. And Levi means attached. And she conceived again and bore a son and said, now I will praise the Lord. Therefore, she called his name Judah, praise. Then she stopped bearing. So God blesses Leah because she's unloved, because there's hostility toward her from Rachel, gives her these sons, but this doesn't really bond her with Jacob as she hoped that it would. But it seems when we come to the fourth son, it almost seems that with Leah, she's at this point at least, she's sort of looking beyond Jacob and she's looking to the Lord. So she names her son Praise. The previous three sons, their names were indicating her desire toward her husband. But now with Judah, she's, for this season anyway, she's got her eyes on the Lord. She's finding her hope in the Lord. Now, chapter 30, verse 1, when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, give me children or else I die. And Jacob's anger was aroused against Rachel, and he said, am I in the place of God who has withheld you from the fruit of the womb? Now, you know, I got to say, poor Jacob. I mean, this is a tough situation, you know. I don't want to make any jokes about, you know, it's hard enough being married to one woman, let alone two, or, you know, that kind of a thing. But, I mean, you know, you could see the wisdom of God in prohibiting a polygamy at a certain point, just saying, you know, that, okay, this is no longer going to be tolerated. Of course, from the very beginning, that was never God's plan. It was something that was so ingrained in those cultures that many of God's people simply adopted the cultural behavior and didn't really adhere closely to God's ideal, because from the very beginning, it was God's ideal that there would be one man and he would have a wife, one man and one woman together forever throughout their lives. But over time, the cultural influences, God allowed certain things, although they weren't the ideal. But then there comes a point under the Mosaic law where God, you know, kind of once again steps in and says, now this is the way it's supposed to be. But we of course, we still see after the time of Moses, we see with David, we see with Solomon, we see this same kind of thing repeated. But in every single case, we see problems. In every single case, we see divisions, we see jealousies, we see conflict in the family with the children and things like that. And, you know, you don't have to have multiple wives or husbands to, you know, simultaneously to know that's true. We know that that's true even as we, you know, go through situations where there's divorce, there's remarriage, there's what we call today blended families. And, please, I'm not criticizing anybody for any of that. I'm just saying you know very well the difficulties that exist in that kind of a situation. I know that from firsthand experience. My parents were divorced when I was a young boy, and my mother later married, my dad married again, and it was a very difficult situation. It just, you know, had so many unpleasant aspects to it. But that's what always happens when we get outside of God's plan. It's what always happens when we think our plan might be better than the Lord's. We're setting ourselves up for a big disappointment and a lot of trouble. I'll tell you, I thank God, Cheryl and I, quite often when we're walking, talking, whatever we're doing, you know, we're talking about our kids, we're going through things with our kids, we both look at each other and, you know, I'm so thankful that these are our kids. You know, that we can both decide to kill them together and not just, you know, one of us wanting to do that or, you know, something like that, you know. It's just, as you read through the story, it's, you know, it's just, you just see that, the sadder side of all of this. So as here now Rachel is crying out to Jacob in frustration. Give me children or I die. And Jacob is, you know, he's upset, but he's given her the right information. He says, look, am I in the place of God? I can't do this for you. I can't help you. And, you know, with Rachel, there are times when I think many of us were looking for help. We're looking for peace. We're looking for solutions. We're looking for consolation, we're looking for answers or whatever, but we're looking in the wrong place. And a lot of times we're putting our expectations on people or things that can never really answer or satisfy. And a lot of times, like Rachel, you know, we're looking at a person and we're thinking that, you know, it's your responsibility and you need to do this for me and I'm miserable because you haven't, you know, come through with this, or, you know, we're looking at those kinds of things when the fact of the matter is, it's God that we need to look to. Rachel needed to look to the Lord. Jacob couldn't do anything for her. And so often that's the case. You know, we can do only so much for others. That's true if you're a husband or a wife. You can only do so much for your spouse. It's true if you're a parent. You can only do so much for your kids. It's true if you're a friend. It's true if you're a pastor. You can only do so much for the members of the congregation. All of us need to remember that every one of us need to ultimately be looking to the Lord. I've got to go back to the Lord. I've got to seek Him. I've got to get my answers from Him. I've got to get my peace from Him. And here, Jacob, inadvertently, is definitely giving Rachel the right counsel. Basically saying, go to God. I can't really do anything for you. And so she said, here is my maid Bilhah. Go into her, and she will bear a child on my knees that I also may have children by her. Does this sound familiar? Remember? It's interesting. This is one family. We're following generation after generation. And look how they're repeating the same kinds of things. This is exactly what Sarah said to Abraham in regard to Hagar. And so Bilhah now is going to become the surrogate. And through Bilhah, Rachel is going to have these two sons, Dan and Naphtali. But when Leah sees, now Leah stopped bearing, remember at this point, she's got four sons of her own, but she stopped bearing. But when she sees that Rachel has given Bilhah to Jacob, then Leah, she says, well, I'm going to give Zilpah to Jacob. And I'm going to get some more kids. So, you know, this is like fierce competition going on in this family to see who can produce more kids. That's really what's happening here. And so through Zilpah comes Gad and also Asher. Now, verse 14, when Reuben went in the days of the wheat harvest, and he found mandrakes in the field, and he brought them to his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, please give me some of your son's mandrakes. Now, mandrakes, the Hebrew word, actually means love apples. And so the idea seems to be that this was some sort of a berry or some sort of a fruit that either actually did, or it was believed that it led to a greater fertility with the women and probably to increase sexual desire. And so that's really what's going on here. Reuben's come up with the mandrakes, and Rachel wants some of them. She obviously believes that this could help her situation. But she said to her, it is a small matter, or is it a small matter that you have taken away my husband? Would you take away my son's mandrakes also? So look at the tension between these sisters. And Rachel said, therefore, he will lie with you tonight for your son's mandrakes. So I don't know what Jacob thought about any of this, but when he came in out of the field in the evening, Leah went out to meet him and said, you must come in to me, for I have surely hired you with my son's mandrakes. And he lay with her that night. Now, this is the Bible we're reading, right? the Bible does tell it like it is. Tells it like it was. So God listened to Leah, and she conceived, and she bore Jacob a fifth son. And Leah said, God has given me my wages because I have given my maid to my husband. So she called his name Issachar. And Issachar, again, means wages. Then Leah conceived again and bore Jacob a sixth son. And Leah said, God has endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will dwell with me because I have borne him six sons. So she called his name Zebulun, which means dwelling. So now with Leah, she then afterward bears to Jacob a daughter, verse 21, and called her name Dinah. So Leah has, notice, she has six children of her own. She has two children from her handmaid. She has seven children, counting Dinah. And Rachel, at this point, is still barren. All Rachel has are the children that came from Bilhah. But then, verse 22, then God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb, and she conceived and bore a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. So she called his name Joseph and said, the Lord shall add to me another son. Here is the the amazing thing. She finally has a son, and what does she say the minute she has him? I want another one. You know, this is the thing she's been crying out for. This is the thing she's been wanting so desperately. She finally has a son, and she names him, I want another one. Talk about, insatiable. I mean, she just cannot be satisfied. But here's where we are introduced to Joseph. He comes now into the picture. And it came to pass, when Rachel had borne Joseph, that Jacob said to Laban, send me away that I may go to my own place, to my country. So again, we've got a long period of time, obviously, all these children being born, and again, just a few verses, really, covering several years. But now, Jacob, having served Laban all of these years, he wants to go back now. He wants to go back to his family, and he wants to establish himself no longer as, you know, Laban's servant, but he wants to get out on his own. And so he says, give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me go, for you know my service which I have done for you. And Laban said to him, please stay, if I have found favor in your eyes, for I have learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me for your sake. Then he said, name your wages and I will give it. So Jacob said to him, you know how I have served you and how your livestock has been with me. For what you had before I came was little, and it has increased to a great amount. The Lord has blessed you since my coming, and now when shall I also provide for my own house? So Jacob's just, you know, making that point. Look, you're blessed, but what about me? I've got nothing. So he said, what shall I give you? And Jacob said, you shall not give me anything. If you will do this thing for me, I will again feed and keep your flocks. Let me pass through all your flocks today. So this is the deal that Jacob is making with Laban. Let me pass through all your flocks today, removing from there all the speckled and spotted and all the brown ones among the lambs and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and these shall be my wages. Now these were considered the inferior amongst the sheep and the goats, these speckled and spotted, they were considered inferior. So Jacob is saying, you know, give me all the secondhand sheep, basically. So my righteousness will answer for me in time to come when the subject of my wages comes before you. Everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and brown among the lambs will be considered stolen if it is with me. And Laban said, oh, that it were according to your word. So Laban thinks, well, this is a great deal. Okay, I'm in. So he removed that day the male goats that were speckled and spotted, all the female goats that were speckled and spotted, every one that had white in it, and all the brown ones among the lambs, and he gave them into the hand of his son. And then he put 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. Now Jacob took for himself rods of green poplar, and of almond and of chestnut trees, peeled white stripes in them, and exposed the white which was in the rods. And the rods which he had peeled, he set before the flocks in the gutters, in the watering troughs where the flocks came to drink, so that they should conceive when they came to drink. Now, this whole practice that Jacob developed here, nobody knows why he did this, or what the significance of it was. Even today in animal husbandry and, you know, in that area, nobody can make any sense of why Jacob did this. So he either did this because he knew something that people today don't even know, or he might have done it, some think it was maybe just superstitious. We don't really know, but what we do know is that the desired result, that the flocks would produce the spotted, the speckled, the streaked sheep and goats, that's what happened. But as we read further in the story, it becomes pretty obvious that it was actually God who did this. It wasn't Jacob's whatever it was that he did here. That wasn't really the secret to this blessing upon the flock. The Lord would make it clear later that he was the one who was blessing Jacob because of Laban's mistreatment of him over the years. And so as we read on through just the last few verses of the chapter, it pretty much just tells us that Jacob, he ended up with the better end of the deal, because all of the sheep were producing after the kind that he had described would be his. And so Laban, who thought he was going to come out ahead in this, Laban is actually on the losing end of the stick here. So I think we just go through 31 rather quickly, because it just kind of ties the whole story together. So now Jacob heard the words of Laban's son, saying, "Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what was our father's he has acquired all this wealth." And Jacob saw the countenance of Laban, and indeed it was not favorable toward him as before. So now there's jealousy, there's hostility that's beginning to develop. So verse 3, "Then the Lord said to Jacob, 'Return to the land of your fathers and to your family, and I will be with you.' So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field, to his flock. And he said to them, 'I see your father's countenance, that it is not favorable toward me as before, but the God of my father has been with me. And you know that with all my might I have served your father. Yet your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times, but God did not allow him to hurt me. If he said thus, 'The speckled shall be your wages,' then all the flocks bore speckled. And if he said thus, 'The streaked shall be your wages,' then all the flocks bore streaked. So God has taken away the livestock of your father, and he has given them to me. And it happened at that time when the flocks conceived that I lifted my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the flocks were streaked, speckled, and gray spotted. Then the angel of God spoke to me in a dream, saying, 'Jacob,' and he said, 'I am here.' And he said, 'Lift your eyes now and see, all the rams which leap on the flocks are streaked, speckled, gray spotted. For I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed the pillar and where you made a vow to me. Now arise, get out of this land and return to the land of your family.'" So you see here, God, this was God overruling and blessing Jacob, because Jacob had been righteous and Laban was taking advantage of him. So Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, "Is there still any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not considered strangers by him? For he has sold us and also completely consumed our money. For all these riches which God had taken from our father are really ours and our children's. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do it." And so Jacob arose, set his sons and his wives on camels, and he carried away all his livestock and all his possessions which he had gained, his acquired livestock which he had gained in Paddan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. Now, 6 more years have passed, so we'll see here in a moment. We've come up to 20 years, basically. It's interesting, too, as you're reading that, it seems that Rachel and Leah, at least at this point, maybe there's been some reconciliation. They seem to be speaking with one voice here. So perhaps there was some harmony after that time. But Laban, he had gone to shear the sheep, and Rachel had stolen the household idols that were her father's. And Jacob stole away unknown to Laban the Syrian, in that he did not tell him that he intended to flee. So he fled with all that he had. He arose and crossed the river and headed toward the mountains of Gilead. So, as you can see, Jacob takes his family, and without notifying Laban, he heads back toward Canaan. And Laban was told on the third day that Jacob had fled. Then he took his brethren with him and pursued him for 7 days' journey and overtook him in the mountains of Gilead. But God had come to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night. And he said to him, "Be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad." So Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mountains, and Laban with his brethren pitched his tent in the mountains of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, "What have you done that you have stolen away unknown to me and carried away my daughters like captives taken with a sword? Why did you flee away secretly and steal away from me and not tell me? For I might have sent you away with joy and songs, with timbrel and harp. And you did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Now you have done foolishly in so doing." So we've obviously got a big family feud here. "It is in my power," Laban says, "to do you harm. But the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, 'Be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad.' And now you have surely gone because you greatly long for your father's house. But why did you steal my gods?" Why did you steal my gods? That's the big question. "Then Jacob answered and said to Laban, 'Because I was afraid.'" "Because I was afraid, I said, 'Perhaps you would take your daughters from me by force. With whomever you find your gods, do not let him live in the presence of our brethren. Identify what I have that is yours. Take it with you.' For Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them." So we see now with Laban, Laban is not a believer in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He's an idolater. And God only knows why Rachel would have taken these gods. But, you know, evidently, as we're looking at these people here, in many cases, their faith is very, very immature, to say the least. And in Laban's case, there really doesn't seem to be any genuine faith. And with Rachel, she's taken the household gods. So Jacob's unaware of it. "And Laban went into Jacob's tent, into Leah's tent, and into the two maids' tents, but he did not find them. Then he went out of Leah's tent and entered Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the household idols, put them in the camel's saddle, and sat on them. And Laban searched all about the tent, but he did not find them. And she said to her father, 'Let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise before you, for the manner of women is with me.' And he searched, but he did not find the household idols. Then Jacob was angry and rebuked Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, 'What is my trespass? What is my sin that you have so hotly pursued me? Although you have searched all my things, what part of your household things have you found? See it here before my brethren, your brethren, that they may judge between us both.'" Now he says, "These 20 years I have been with you. Your ewes, your female goats, have not miscarried their young. I have not eaten of the rams of your flock. That which was torn by beast I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it. You required it from my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. There I was in the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from my eyes. Thus I have been in your house 20 years. I have served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flock. And you have changed my wages 10 times. Unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night." Laban was, he wasn't a good man. And as we can see here, he constantly manipulated Jacob's situation, changed his wages 10 times. But the Lord was with Jacob in all of this. And again, going back to the sowing and reaping, you know, Jacob is reaping what he's sown, but there's also something instructive. There's something that's happening in Jacob throughout this time, this difficult time. God is forming in Jacob a more godly character. And he is teaching Jacob more of a dependency on himself. And, you know, the Bible tells us not to despise the chastening of the Lord. And of course, when, you know, when we do sow to the flesh and we reap, that is a form of chastisement. But God's chastening always has the objective of bringing us into a better situation. It has the objective of bringing us into a closer relationship with the Lord. So again, the scripture says, do not despise the chastening of the Lord. For whom the Lord loves, he rebukes and he chastens everyone, every child that he receives. And so here with Jacob, yes, on the one hand, he's reaping what he's sown, but God is still there. God is watching over him. God is not allowing Laban to take full advantage of him as he would have desired to do. And as Jacob here acknowledges, the God of his father had still been with him through this whole process. And when we blow it, when we make mistakes, when we sow to the flesh, when we do those kinds of things that get us into trouble, God is still with us if we turn to him and if we seek him and if we genuinely come back and repent and say, Lord, you know, I was wrong. And even though we might go through a difficult season as a result of that, God will still be with us and he will work through those things to bring us out on the other side. You know, I have met many people who have, as I said earlier, they have a lot of self-inflicted wounds. And one of the worst things about a self-inflicted kind of a wound spiritually is you always have in your mind the question of whether or not God is going to be merciful to you, because after all, you're in the condition that you're in because you sinned. As a matter of fact, I just received an email from a person a couple of days ago asking that very question. And they were talking about the things that have happened in their life due to their own foolishness, and wondering, can God redeem even that? Or am I sort of destined to just have to live with this the rest of my life? But you know, I don't think so. I think that God, in his mercy, will restore us beautifully. And again, it doesn't mean that we won't have some consequences that we might have to live with the rest of our life. But it's still, the door is still open for us to come back in and to have fellowship and to have experience the blessing. Not just the forgiveness, but even to experience future blessing. So if you have done something foolishly, if you have sown to the flesh, if you are in that place of reaping, know this, that God is still with you and he's gracious. And he's merciful. And as you turn to him, you know, I think of the people of Israel after they, you know, in the time of Samuel, they wanted a king. They chose Saul. They did all of these things that were just completely contrary to what God wanted them to do. And they know that they're wrong and they feel like they deserve to be judged. And they come to Samuel and they say, you know, we've done all of this. What do we do now? And Samuel says, you've done wickedly, but turn back to the Lord and seek him, and he will bless you if you will follow on from here. And that's that great word from Isaiah 55, that word that calls out to those that have really sinned. That word that says, seek the Lord while he may be found, call upon him while he is near, let the wicked forsake his way, and the unrighteous man his thoughts, and let him return to the Lord. God is calling the backslider back. God is calling the person in sin to come out of sin. And it says, let him return to the Lord. And then it says this, and it says, and he will abundantly pardon. You see, sometimes a person thinks that they've gone so far that there's no possibility of not just restoration, but there certainly could be no possibility of blessing in my future because, you know, look what I've done. but God will abundantly pardon. If we genuinely repent, if we genuinely turn back to Him, He will bless us beyond, of course, what anything we deserve. We can count on that. We have that promise in His Word. And here Jacob is acknowledging, God has been with me, and He's the one that's protected me. So Laban answered and he said to Jacob, "These daughters are my daughters. These children are my children. This flock is my flock. All that you see is mine. But what can I do this day to these daughters or to their children whom they have borne? Now therefore come and let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me." So Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. Then Jacob said to his brethren, "Gather stones." And they took stones and made a heap. And they ate there on the heap. And Laban called it Jagar Sahadutha. But Jacob called it Galeed. And both of these things mean simply the witness of the heap. So this heap is witness between you and me this day. Therefore, its name was called Galeed. Also, Mizpah. Because he said, "May the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent one from another." Now, you may be seeing those little Mizpah things where, you know, a person will wear one side around their neck and the other, and "May the Lord watch between you and me," and that's a nice sentimental thing, but that's really not what these two had in mind. What they were saying is, "I don't trust you for a minute. I'm only going to trust God to keep you from, you know, the evil that I know you're prone to do. So if you take other wives," Laban is speaking, "beside my daughters, although no man is with us to see, God is witness between you and me." Then Laban said to Jacob, "Here is this heap and here is this pillar which I have placed between you and me. This heap is a witness and this pillar is a witness that I will not pass beyond this heap to you and you will not pass beyond this heap and this pillar to me for harm. The God of Abraham," now listen to this, this is Laban, "the God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, and the God of their fathers judge between us." Now, the God of their fathers, and here's where we see where Laban was at. Laban didn't really know the true God. He didn't have that kind of relationship, because we know from other passages of Scripture that Abraham's father, Terah, was an idolater. And that they all served idols on the other side of the Euphrates. And that's why God called him out of there. But here, Laban, you know, he's kind of got the politically correct perspective here. The God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, the God of their fathers judge between us. And Jacob, listen to Jacob though, "Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac." So Jacob's swearing by the Lord. Laban, he's got kind of his own version of God that he's made up here. "And so Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain and called his brethren to eat bread. And they ate bread and stayed all night on the mountain. And early in the morning, Laban rose, kissed his sons and daughters and blessed them. Then Laban departed and returned to his place." So we made it. And next week, Jacob heading back to his father Isaac, and he is going to have one amazing encounter.